Hey, I'm Hannah Shepherd, and welcome to the Freed Up Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about stewardship. I'm actually joined by Pastor Brian Tome. And you know what? You might be asking, why is a pastor going to talk a little bit about stewardship today? It's first of all weird to be talking about money in general, and even more weird to bring a pastor in to talk about money. So we're starting this whole big conversation about money, but not really talking about money at all. We're talking about stewardship. But before we get started and diving into that, let's hear a quick recap of where we are.
One of the ways a biblical worldview alters your understanding of money that you're not going to get from a lot of different places financially is understanding that your finances aren't yours. You and I don't own them. God owns everything. Every single thing. And when we understand this, it actually brings a level of freedom because this thing isn't my identity. This thing isn't the scorecard that tells me whether or not I'm good and whether I'm smart. It is hypercritical to understand the difference between ownership and stewardship. We don't own it. God has blessed us with it, and we are meant to steward it. When you have order and systems to manage the things that He's allowing us to use, you can become a good steward.
So, Pastor Tome, why would we do that? Why would we start with the spiritual side of things as opposed to maybe not a financial advisor? Why wouldn't we do that?
Well, we got to ask ourselves, why is money such a big deal, right? I mean, it's a big deal for everybody. And it's not simply a matter of math, of adding up the numbers and making the budget work. It's because money is a spiritual power. That's how Jesus describes it. He talks about money more than anything else. It's a spiritual power. So before we start talking about, you know, X's and O's of strategy and Excel spreadsheets and everything else, we've got to see that this actually is vying to be a false god for our affections. And if we don't get our mind right spiritually, we have zero chance of getting our life right financially.
You said that money is actually a spiritual power. You know what? One of the things that we say or that can be said in church is that God owns everything. So if that's true, then why do we need money? Why can't God just give us the things that He wants us to have? What does it mean when we say God owns everything? What does that mean practically? Could you break that down?
Well, I haven't generated anything in my life. I didn't generate my lungs. I didn't generate my heart. I didn't generate my kids. I mean, I had something to do. I had something to do with bringing my kids to life. But really, I didn't create that DNA tissue. These things all remind me that I'm not the creator. I'm not the ultimate mighty one. God is the mighty one. And I don't generate or create gold either, or my resources. God gives me the capacity to do those things. That's what we're talking about here today.
So if He has given us those things, then maybe He's given us them to steward them.
Well, yeah, and we can't just say, well, why didn't God just give me money? Why doesn't God just give you pizza? Why doesn't God just give you the food you need? He's put us in a place where we need to be dependent on Him. The fact that I have to sleep shows me that I'm not sufficient in and of myself. The fact that I need to multiple times a day drink water and eat something in order to keep myself going, it reminds me that I'm not all that. And I think that our financial tensions and our need to keep our eye on the financial ball, if we're spiritually rooted, it will remind us, I'm not self-sufficient. I need God in this area. And I think that's why God has this area in our lives as an appropriate spiritual tension point.
So assuming that I understand the concept of stewardship, which you've kind of talked about a little bit, what's a healthy balance for that? It's neither neglectful or obsessive, but it seems to be kind of like the Goldilocks story where the teddy bear is like, it was just right. That's what stewardship feels like. So talk a little bit more to someone who maybe has heard the term before, but is trying to figure out what that balance is.
Well, I don't like the term stewardship. I really don't, but there's not really a better term for it. Stewardship just sounds so fuddy-duddy and churchy, but it actually is still accurate if you understand what it is, because most of us don't use that word in the rest of life. Probably the word that we do use that's closest to it would be management.
Yeah, it's good.
For those of us who have a financial advisor who helps us with retirement accounts or something like that, that person is managing our resources. they don't own it. And in fact, when our stock portfolio, if we happen to be blessed enough to have a stock portfolio, when it goes down, that person really doesn't care. I mean, they care to the point that they don't want to lose the account, but it's not their money. They're managing. It's not their money. If we could learn from that occupation and apply that to our relationship with God, we would be the better for it. If I could come to see that my money isn't my money, my house isn't my house. It is God's house.
That's good.
And I'm here to manage it. Once we start to see things that way, we become less bothered when we get a dent on our car. We become less devastated when we lose all of our possessions to a house fire, as I did at one point, because they weren't my possessions. They were God's possessions, and he either wanted them back or he wanted them charred.
Funny. You know what? That's good. I don't know that our culture really supports that language that you just said. It doesn't support this idea of management over ownership. Like, maybe someone listening right now is like, well, my culture does. I don't know what you're talking about. But in what, from my understanding, anything I see on social is trying to get us to own everything. If you aren't an owner, you're a terrible person. So how do I know when I'm being a manager versus being an owner? Because like I said, that seems a little counterintuitive. Culture's always trying to push us to, if you work a 9 to 5, you're terrible. You need to be an owner. You know, how do I know if I'm actually, even if I do own a business, how can I be a manager and not an owner of something that actually belongs to God?
Okay, so if you're a manager, you have less stress over things than if you are an owner. Okay, that's one. You're less concerned about rips in your clothes. You're less concerned about the dip in your stock account, your retirement, because it's not yours. So you have less stress about money. That's one thing. The second thing is, when you own something, your main goal is to preserve it.
That's good.
That's what you want. You don't want anyone to take it. You don't want it to rust. You want to. When you manage something, you want to grow it. God blesses us with things. He expects us to grow them. When he gives you an ability to speak, he expects you to grow your ability to speak and to try to teach as many people as possible, to help as many people as possible. And when he gives you resources, he expects you to grow those resources and grow their impact. I have a good friend of mine went to a church that had a financial scandal. The pastor of that church was misappropriating building fund accounts, and it was just an ugly thing. It was in the papers, and he tells a story of a friend of his coming to him and saying, "Well, how do you feel about giving all that money to that church? How do you feel about what they did with your money? I mean, are you feeling bad about that or embarrassed?" And my friend said, "No, not at all, because God directed me to give that money to the church. It was my tithe, which means it was his money, God's money, not mine. And what happened with that church is really none of my business. That's between them and God."
Yeah.
Now, you start talking about that kind of thing, you start sound like you are a complete and total idiot. But you could see my friend here. It was like, no, I manage the money. It's God's money. When I release that tithe, I wasn't directing that. I wasn't responsible for how the church did that. I'm not saying that we should go to churches that mismanage money. I'm not saying you should stay at a church that mismanages money. I'm saying my friend had the heart of a steward, a heart of a manager there. He didn't have the heart of an owner where somebody misused his money. It wasn't his money.
You know what? I love what you just said there. I love that you gave our listeners some practical feelings that they would know whether or not they're a manager or owner. But let's say you just gave that rundown, and we have someone who is having a moment right now where they're like, oh man, I'm actually operating more like an owner. How would they start to move from operating like an owner to operating more like a manager and doing some of that stewardship that we talked about?
Okay, so if you just can't make the ends meet, if every single month there is stress, if every single month you're unsure of how to pay your rent, if every single month the credit card statement comes and you go, oh my gosh, how is it that much? For you as a manager, you've got to understand where your money is going. If you don't understand where your money is going, you're not managing it. It's managing you. So you've got to do something like for a month, collect every receipt. Yes, receipt. There's such a thing.
Oh gosh, throwback.
Yes, throwback. There's these little pieces of paper that
black
actually you can get. Black,
and,
black
white.
And white. Black
they
and
white. Color.
Black and white. This is not a race thing, but yes, black and white. They will actually give you pieces of paper and you can actually count up at the end of the month exactly how much you spent in your categories.
Mm-hmm.
As a manager, you're going to have to figure out what you're spending money on. I would never go to a financial advisor who is managing my money and they go, oh, I don't know where it is. I'm not sure what account I stuck that in. You for lane one, when you're in hyper stress, you've got to know what's happening with your money. Are you spending too much money out? Are you spending too much money on clothes? Or is all of your stuff, all of your expenditures really reasonable? You've got an income problem and you're just in the wrong job, the wrong profession. You've got to figure it out. As a manager, they figure this out, not just passively say, oh, I'll never figure out money. I hear people say that. Oh, I'm just not good with money.
So we started off with a spiritual principle, but now we're going to get into the practical nitty gritty. And with that, I want to introduce our second guest for today. James is joining us as a 21-year certified financial advisor and the host of the Rich Life podcast. Welcome, James. So glad to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So Brian actually got us started talking about the spiritual principle of stewardship. And now we want to get into some of those bigger questions like cash flow and net worth, all those words that can fly. And you know what? We've actually had a lot of questions about cash flow, net worth, and generosity. Can you tell our listeners, how do those three things relate to each other?
Oh, man. I think they are layered on top of each other. They're an indication of financial health. And so when we think about stewardship, they are the measurements that tell us if you're being a faithful steward or not. So when you think about cash flow, it's the simple exercise of deciding whether you are matching what's coming in with what's going out, just getting to a place of neutral. You're not spending money you don't have. You're not over allocating to things you can't afford. That is base camp. That's kind of the step one in the process. It's just getting to a place of stability and consistency. But then once we get past that, you've got to turn your attention to, are we actually growing this thing? Because you could stay neutral cash flow for your entire life and you're not being a good steward. It's not enough to just bury your talent in the sand and never multiply it. The master expected multiplication in the parable of the talents. That is net worth. The goal
is the pastor's supposed to be giving the Bible references here. And now you're bringing up Bible stuff I have.
Go ahead. All right,
why don't you recap? Just tell us about that story, James.
Yeah, so the story is one that I think a lot of us are pretty familiar with. But the basic concept is that this master gives talents, gives resources to three servants. He gives one, he gives 1, 3, and 1, 5, and he goes away. And while he's gone, these different stewards, these different servants do things with those resources. A couple of them actually do things that result in multiplication. They grow what they were given, and they turn it into 6 and to 10. And then there's this other servant who buried their resources in the sand and hid them and just kept them safe, quote unquote. And when the master comes back, you would think he'd be happy with the servant that just hid the resources. Hey, I kept them safe for you. Didn't I do a good job? I didn't do anything risky. I didn't take any chances. It's actually the one he's not happy with. So when we think about this concept of stewardship, when we just get to a place where we're neutral and what's coming in is matching what's going out, to me, that is the epitome of just burying these resources in the sand. God has given us talents and skills and abilities, not to mention financial resources. If we aren't multiplying them and growing them, we're not being good stewards.
Simply preserving things is not good enough.
That's right.
You're exactly right. We've got to be able to grow the things that we have, or else we're not managing the things that God would give us. I mentioned earlier, who's going to hire you as a financial manager unless you're going to grow their finances?
Grow their finances.
That's right. There's an expectation that the number's going to go up over time. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know what? When you start to talk about what God wants and what he is asking of us, I think we get into this whole lane of generosity, right?
Right.
And that is the financial piece that nobody is talking about
really
anywhere, except maybe pastors. Help me see how financial generosity is actually a critical form from a number standpoint, actually, of a part of someone's financial plan.
Yeah, it is the ultimate layer that proves that you're free. So mm-hmm. when you think about the net worth stage, it's about growing, multiplying, but it actually is more about managing emotion and making sure that you're not emotionally spending and over, you know, relying on debt. But then when you get to this place where you've mastered that and you've built this net worth, you can have a different emotion, one of fear and hoarding, where you're trying to continually protect yourself and make sure you're okay, and you get to this oversave. Generosity is the test that proves that you still maintain a stewardship mindset rather than an ownership mindset. You know, an ownership mindset, I did all this, I built all this net worth is mine, where a stewardship mindset still recognizes, just like in the parable of talents, when the master came back, it was all still his.
Right.
There wasn't a situation where he said, well, you keep 90, I'll take my 10. 100% of what they doubled was still the master's. That's the way we need to think about this. And generosity is what keeps us connected to, it's all yours. What do you want me to do with it? Why did you give it to me in the first place?
That's really good. Anything to add to that?
Well, that's coming not from a pastor guy. That's coming from a financial guy. I oftentimes just feel really like bummed that anytime someone like me talks about generosity, people are thinking, oh, well, of course you would say that because you got payroll to hit and you've got your Rolls Royce you've got to buy and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, your jet?
Yeah, my jet. Right. Everyone always puts that on me. No, this is not a pastor thing. This is not a church thing. This is a basic Bible thing. And this is how everybody operates who is truly free and is operating in a spiritually potent way. So I just love hearing the financial guy from the Pure Numbers talk that way.
So in order to be financially free, talking to the financial advisor, there are some systems that have to be in place that have to work together in order for this thing to work. And namely, among them is going to be your cash flow, your net worth, and of course, generosity. Talk me through the first two. What are these systems of cash flow? Because when I hear that, it just kind of sounds like maybe a vocab word on my financial planning spelling test. You know what I mean? And then when I hear net worth, I'm like, I only hear that when I hear about billionaires, and I'm not a billionaire. So can you break those two terms down for our listeners in a way that really connects to that system of being financially free?
Absolutely. Yeah, it is all about systems, and managing the detail can be really overwhelming unless you have a system. But the cash flow system truly is about just understanding where money is going, what's coming in, and where is it going to? Because most people don't know what their life costs. They actually have no idea what it takes to make their house run. They don't know what they spend on groceries. I'll talk to people and I'll say, hey, what do you spend on groceries? They say, we could probably spend, I don't know, $300 a month. And I say, first of all, no, you can't. That's impossible. Right. Secondly, you know, I didn't ask them how much they could spend. I asked them how much they do spend. And most people can't answer that question. They start with what they think they could squeeze themselves into with no concept of reality. What do you spend now? We got to know the answer to that before we start squeezing ourselves into boxes we don't fit in. So cash flow is all about tracking. You need a system, whether it's an automated system online or it's a system you use a spreadsheet for, you've just got to put in the work to make sure you know what's coming in and what's going out and why. Then you can start to adjust it. But most people don't even start with reality first, and we got to start there.
Am I a loser that I don't know how much we spend on groceries?
Yes.
Why? Why? I am a loser,
yeah.
But I'm asking you if I'm
you
a loser
asked a
because,
very, it
because
was a yes
that.
Or no question, so I give you yes or no answer.
Oh,
no,
gosh.
Answer. No, it is less about restriction. You know, a lot of times people say, well, we've got enough, so I don't need to know the answers to those questions. And I get that. You can live without answering those questions. But when you know what your life costs, even if it's fully affordable, you can still face it with a much more realistic view. And we spent, you know, $1,400 last month on groceries. What are we doing? That feels high to me. We've done something's gone further. Or one of the classics is you can actually start capturing all the subscriptions that you pay for that you just ran, you know, the Netflix and the Disneys and all the things that are just sucking $10, $12 a month away from you that you're not paying attention to. When you track it, you can at least face it and go, we don't need three of these. We need these two. We use them all the time. But just knowing the answer to where it's going, you don't have to change stuff, but you'll be able to change the stuff that you understand if you know what the reality is.
All right. So I get that. I get that maybe we're spending money on things that we don't want to spend money on. We've just forgotten, right? That's why they give us those those month-long trials because they're getting our information and it's going to get lost in the credit card statement and we're going to pay for it forever and ever and not even know it. So I get that. I do get that. But just to kind of pick a little fight with you here, not pick a little fight, but just because financial are a difficult thing where it seems like so oftentimes there is a system. If you're not doing that system, then you're really, really awful. Like for me and my wife, where we are right now, you know, I'm 55, we're in our prime income earning years. We've passed financial stress. We passed level one at about age 30. We passed level two at about age, I don't know, 35, maybe 40. And what we know now is our budget, our system is, here's the amount of money we're giving away. It's far beyond the time, been far beyond the time for a long time. Here's the amount of money we're saving, far beyond what we ever would have thought that we would have been saving when we were 25. And now, so long as I'm paying off my credit card bill every month and I'm still hitting those two main things that are important, I am good to go. That's how I've been functioning. So tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know if it's necessarily that you're wrong. I think that it's more about you don't know exactly what your life costs. For people who have not started from a tithe and worked down, they at least need to start somewhere. If you're going to say we're going to do this, this, and this, and what's left is what our life costs, you've at least distilled it down that way. You know what your life costs in that regard. Most people need to start the other direction. What does my life cost? As a result of that, how much income do I need to maintain? How much can I give away? When you know the people who have achieved this financial security to say, look, we're good. You know, I get it. I don't badger clients to make sure if they've got tons of money that they're counting every penny all the time. But if they can't answer the question, what does my life cost? And you've just backed into it a different direction, right? Then you still know what it takes to make your life work, which gives you the freedom then to give away because you know this is what I need to make my life work.
That's a good push, James. I love the push. I love the push. I'm just pushing a little bit because I think some of us, when we come to these financial discussions, we immediately get bogged down with all the things that we're supposed to do. And it gives us, or some of us, a reason just to opt out of the conversation. And I'm just trying not to have people opt out. And I think you and I are in the exact same place, which is this. You have to take control of your finances. You have to stop being passive and just going, oh, I don't know where I am. I don't know how much my groceries bill is, or that's the thing here. So I think the folks who are listening, you could take James' system, you could take my system, you could create your own system, but you have to create something that takes control of you understanding your finances. And you're exactly right. Where most people have no clue and they have no energy to even start having a clue. They're afraid of the question and they're terrified of what the answers might be. And we'll never get any place new if we don't buck up and start doing something different.
And they'll never experience freedom.
Right.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about getting to a place of freedom. And most people are stuck in this wishy-washy, I don't know the reality that I'm living in. I don't know what things cost. And so I stay fearful. I live small. Most of the time, what I see people, that's why these things build on each other, right? Cash flow understanding builds to the next level, which is, are you actually creating net worth? Are you building something that's multiplying? Are you creating resources that can be used in the future in whatever direction God takes you? Or are you just basically making ends meet? Then generosity is the final measure that says, this is the test that shows, yes, I've done all of those things. I know what my life costs. I'm actually multiplying it. And then when I've multiplied it, I'm obedient. When God says give, I give, right? All of those things work in tandem. So where, if you've already knocked out the first two, cool. If you got a system that's helping you, great. Are you doing the third one? If you've knocked out, you know, the first one, are you actually building? Are you in that net worth system where you actually know what your financial net worth is? You know, net worth is a term that, like you were saying, Hannah, it feels like this big thing and only really wealthy people talk about it. That's the stuff that's got to change. Net worth is a super basic financial concept that everybody just needs to understand. What you own minus what you owe is your net worth. Be clear, this is not your human worth.
Right.
You are infinitely valuable.
Oh, thank God, right, James. Yeah. Breathe a sigh of relief.
That's right. But you need to know what your net worth is, because it tells you you are actually multiplying, you're growing, you're getting healthier and more stable in your position to be obedient when God says do something. Most people who don't know their net worth assume they're in trouble. They assume they're way behind. And if God gives them any indication that they should act, they should give something away, they should be aggressive in their generosity, they're always going to shrink back because they don't know if they can. But by knowing where you stand in your net worth, you can have the confidence to act, because you say, yeah, I'm good. I've checked all my boxes. I'm okay. Now I've got plenty. What do you want me to do with it, God?
Yeah, or not even their generosity, even to sound unspiritual here for a moment, agree with that entirely. But even stuff like, maybe I should get another car, a new car, you know, maybe I should stop playing poor and I should really take a sweet vacation because our family needs to recuperate. I need to recuperate, and I shouldn't be living in fear. Like, no, I can actually do that. But we're in these fearful old habits and patterns because we really don't know where we are financially.
That's so good. You guys are, I love how we are weaving together this idea of, yes, there's a practical piece, but there's a spiritual thing at play here, that there's a space that God wants our listeners, if you're listening, he wants you to get to. And I love that you're taking us there. So here's a question about cash flow, one that I think we get pretty often. So actually, I'm going to back up. Let's talk about net worth before we talk about that. So when it comes to net worth, it looks like maybe I have a lot of net worth, but most of it is my house. And the reason I want to talk about this first is because my follow-up question is, can I have a positive cash flow if I still have debt? So hit me with both of those answers and kind of whatever tandem, because like you said, they build on each other. So answer that question about net worth, and maybe most of it's in my house, but answer also about that idea of debt while having a positive cash flow.
Yeah. So those are great questions. The net worth, when it's mostly tied up in the house, is more common than it should be. We have this attitude about debt, that it's terrible, that it's evil, that we need to pay it all off. And so a lot of people are just pumping money into their homes, paying their mortgage off as fast as they can. Or they see the value of their home as the only really big asset that they own. So they're just piling into it because it's the only number that seems big to them, because they're not saving in the 401k. They're not doing a Roth IRA. They're not saving anywhere else. They're just cranking on that mortgage and building equity in their home. It's not uncommon, but it's a problem. I tell people all the time, when they think, you know, I'm good, my net worth is really big, I've got this giant house that I have no mortgage on, I go, so how do you retire? You go pull a shingle off the roof and go buy milk with it? Like, how does this work? The only way you get those assets back out is if you sell the house, or you go back to the bank and borrow the money back out. You need to build resources that are not your house. It's okay to have a house. I'm all about home ownership, but we have way over dramatized what it actually accomplishes for people. We need to be more intentional about building resources that are usable, that can be given and spent in the future. When God tells us give, we can be more aggressive with giving. When we get to a place where we want to do something, like Brian, you were talking about, take this big vacation, we have to have resources to do that. We can't keep going back to the house and borrowing from the house we keep paying down to go live life.
Shoot, if you even want to buy a car, cars are so ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you got to have assets to be able to do that. Or, like you said, have a home equity credit line. Okay, well, there you go. You just put some debt on the house. This is one thing I like about the program. For many believers, because of some of the financial products that have come down the pike for the last decades, I've been a follower of Christ for a long, long time, so I've been through a bunch of them. It's like, the defining goal is not to have no debt. I'm sorry, if the vision for your life is to have no credit, or if the vision for your life is to have no car payment, you don't have much of a vision for your life. You know, if debt was this hyper evil thing, then the nation of Israel wouldn't have been directed that they should be the ones who were lending money. Because if debt was inherently evil, God wouldn't have had his people participating in the banking system. So debt is not this inherently evil thing, but it is a tool, and a lot of us are inherently under its evil if we're not playing the debt race right, many of us are not. And that's why I think your stuff, James, is really refreshing. And I think for some of us, we need to reorient our attitudes towards it.
Totally. Yeah. And that actually leads into the question, Hannah, you just asked, that, you know, this whole idea of debt. Can I have positive cash flow and still have debt? Yes. And actually, that's part of the problem, is that people tend to measure their financial success with positive cash flow. Right. So as long as I'm paying my bills and I get a little left over every month, I'm okay. So I can afford to get that $100 a month payment. I'm going to go buy that gadget for $50 a month. I'm going to go buy that car for $400 a month. I'm going to bet that, and I'm going to keep stacking payments on top of each other. And as long as I have enough in to deal with the out, it doesn't matter how much I've financed. And that is a train wreck.
Yes.
Mm. That's the problem, is that people think in terms of cash flow. They've got to start thinking in terms of net worth.
Yeah. Wow, this is some really, really valuable stuff to me and hopefully to all of our listeners. And it gives us a place, and it gives all of us a place that we can just really build from. So as we finish up today, what's the final 10% that you would give people about stewardship from both of you all? And if you could say one thing to encourage and to challenge people, what would it be?
I think the most important thing when it comes to stewardship is to do something. Maybe it's as simply as categorizing all your expenses for a month. Man, if you would do that, that's something great. Maybe it's something, maybe you're going to take your credit card and you're going to pay an extra $100 on it this month. Or you're going to, I just don't want people to get frustrated that they can't get it all together. It sounds so trite, if it's true. Life with God is a journey. It is. It's not a destination. It is a journey. And your financial life is going to be a journey too. We've got to be satisfied that we're taking steps.
I think for me, all of those things that you start doing have to start from a stewardship mindset rather than an ownership mindset. If you are looking at your balance sheet, if you have your net worth and you're saying, this is all mine, look at all this that I created, that's a problem. Just that by itself is an indicator that you have a stewardship problem. You're in the ownership mindset. I did all this, so it's all mine, and I get to decide what to do with it. The stewardship mindset actually gets to a place where nothing you have is yours. Nothing. There isn't a penny in your pocket. There isn't a talent or a skill. There isn't a breath in your lungs that he didn't first place there. And if he gave it to you, he gave it to you for a reason. So the question is not, what do I get to do with my stuff for myself? It's, what did you give me this for? What's the purpose of this, whether it's a skill or a resource? And then you turn, like Brian was saying, and say, now I'm going to go do these things with that mindset, because it changes everything. If you approach budgeting, or you approach your debt situation, or you approach your spending with that mindset, everything changes, because you hold it as if you're caring for someone else's resource, because it's exactly what you're doing.
Interesting stewardship resource from the Tome family was early days of financial stress for us was, I brought significant consumer debt into the marriage. My wife brought significant consumer debt in the marriage. We both had car payments. We both had credit cards that were unpaid. And I had these old things that were called payment booklets. I had a payment booklet for a VCR and a payment booklet for a TV. Yeah. You just like a little slip of paper, and every month you do, like, I don't remember what it was, $16 a month or $22 a month or whatever for this TV. And it forced us to actually move in with my in-laws. Now, you take a 22-year-old virile young guy and you say, good, you're going to live in the attic of your in-laws. It just kind of knocks you down, right?
A little bit.
But yeah. That helped us get to a good place financially. But the significant story around stewardship was, I'm about 32, and got two kids, maybe three at that point. I can't remember exactly, but we paid cash for the largest television you could buy at that time. It was a tube, the old tube TVs. I think it was a 32-inch. It was
probably
heavy.
Weighed 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, it was. It was unbelievably heavy. And I remember bringing this into the house. It was this beautiful thing of, I bought with cash a TV, and we were undoing it. And I'm like, oh, I wanted to get every single moment. So I'm pulling out the instruction book. I'm looking at the instruction book. And I read the instruction books. Don't use detergent on the screen. I look over, and my my 7-year-old son, whoever old he was, he's got some detergent and he's squirting it on the thing and wait, he's trying to be a good little kid. And I go, what are you doing? What? Stop, stop. And I'm like, you can't do it. I'm just freaking out. And my older daughter, who she knows the spiel. All the kids know the spiel. They're having French fries and they're eating French fries. And I come over and I take a French fry and they complain. I'm like, these aren't your French fries. They're God's French fries. They're God's French fries. And not only that, I bought those for you. So my kids.
I was waiting for that part to come.
That was, yeah, that was definitely coming. Like, whenever my kids were possessive over their stuff, I was like, what? So I'm like, that's not your fries. So she's heard that for, I've drilled this into her mind. And then she says to me, Dad, isn't this God's TV? And I said, shut up. That is not what I want to hear right now. But she was exactly right.
Go
but
to
I
your
wasn't,
room,
I
right?
Wasn't, yeah. I wasn't living that way, right? I think all of us give lip service to good financial principles. We give lip service to nice spiritual sayings. But when it comes to down to how many of us actually live that way, how many of us have that bedded deep in our soul, there's not that many. But I'll tell you what, we get this stewardship thing right, it's going to bring a level of freedom. It's going to be beautiful.
That's great. Well, today has truly been awesome. Thank you both for so
much
wisdom.
The TV was fine.
Oh, yeah.
I freaked
of course
out
it was.
For no reason. It was fine.
It was. This has been so, so good. So full of wisdom and even in some encouragement. So thanks so much for joining us today. Next week, we're going to be talking about the one thing that gets all of us excited, and that is about making money. So we'll see you soon.